Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is, shit. What's this round? This is the 28th, I think it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's almost April.
Almost April, almost Easter. It is spring, officially. Like, you know.
Allegedly.
Yeah. I haven't been here, I was in Atlanta. I just got back today, and the weather down there was terrible. It was freezing.
Yeah, freezing. Like, wow, like real cold, dude.
Real
like,
cold, real cold.
Like, I've had to have the building, the concierge had to go, like, into the apartment and, like, make sure the heat was on and all mm-hmm. that, like, turn it up to a certain level. Mm-hmm. It's been crazy.
Yeah, it was cold. It was like, and you know, even during the day it was cold, but obviously at nighttime it was like, it was cold, man. It's like shit. It was cloudy and rainy and just terrible. The whole
dreary, trip, yeah.
Very dreary. So, how's it been up here? Has it been better?
No.
No, it's been nasty.
It's been cold.
Okay.
You know, we had like one nice, or we had a couple of days where it was beautiful outside in terms of the sky being blue and everything, but it was still cold.
Yeah, it was a lot of like, it was a lot of 38s. Like
yeah.
38 degree days.
Like 43.
Yeah, yeah, like the weird ass numbers. It's
yeah.
not quite freezing, but it's
like
not
might,
like, yeah.
Yeah. Like there was one day where I had on my parka because it was 40, but the sun was out. So while the sun was out, I was actually warm in my coat. But as soon as the sun started going down, I was cold.
Just like freezing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I got just a couple quick light things. Just one thing. So I went to the gym this evening before we started up, and I was watching the McDonald's basketball game.
Yeah.
The McDonald's All-American game, which they played tonight. It was live. And just from a basketball standpoint, hey, man. Them boys is terrible.
They ain't got no skills.
No, they don't know. None of them young guys that I saw tonight really know how to actually like play the game. They all just like grab the ball, dribble it to the hole, like 1-on-5 and try to dunk or lay it up. Like nobody's passing out. Like nobody's really shooting jump shots. Like maybe they're doing like little turnaround, little baby hooks in the lane, but like just the skill level, it's just all about dunking. It's all about just dunking.
Dunking in threes, that's
dunking.
It.
But they weren't even barely doing threes, is what I'm saying. It was just all about dunking. It was like, man, it wasn't even entertaining. You know, it wasn't even, I don't know. I mean, of course they're gonna get coached up hopefully next year in the schools that they chose to go to, but it just made me a little nervous, is all I'm saying. You know, made me a little bit like low key nervous. You know,
there was actually an article I read on ESPN about that, and they talked about the McDonald's Americans and actually talking about how few of them actually go on to have pro success.
Mm-hmm.
You actually round out the numbers. It was like a really low percentage.
Yeah.
Of those guys make it. So, you know, that was even more interesting. So
yeah.
God bless them. And hopefully they get they get paid under the table like everybody else. And,
Yeah. Put a little money to the side and, you know,
yeah.
go on, start your life
get
up,
your
you
degree.
Know,
get your degree.
Yeah, do a little travel and start your life up. Y'all got any shout outs or anything?
Oh,
yeah,
I have, go ahead. Cause you never have them, Sean. You go ahead first.
Yeah. I just wanted to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Christine. She actually, it's not really a shout out, but she had lost her grandson in a really tragic car accident.
Yeah.
Recently, I told you guys about it, and
yeah.
we had a memorial for him on Saturday. And I just wanted to say, you know, I'd gone there. We met through Facebook. really, really sweet, man, but just like a lot of love. You ever go, you know, into like a room and you can just sort of
feel it. Yeah, you can feel it.
You can feel it, man. You can feel it. And I was just, you know, blessed and sort of happy to, you know, have been a part of that for the day, even if it was for a short time. Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, just give her a shout out and just, you know, send her some good energy and some love.
Okay. What about you, Nye?
Okay. So I have a couple of shout outs. My first shout out is because, you know, it's Aries season. And in the past week, listen, Negro.
Here we go.
In the past week alone, because y'all need to put some respect on the creativity and star power of Aries. Mm. So the past week alone, it's been Shaka's birthday, Mariah's birthday, Diana Ross's birthday, Aretha Franklin's birthday. Today is Salt's birthday from Salt and Pepper. It's also Orange Juice Jones's birthday. And tomorrow, or Friday, is MC Hammer's birthday. So shout out to the Aries.
Mm.
I also want to give a weird kind of shout out to Roseanne. So Roseanne, the reboot, premiered last night.
Did you see it?
Well, I told myself I wasn't going to watch it, but my TV just happened to be on it. And I looked up and I kept saying, I'm going to turn. But the longer it was on, the more I was like, I might as well.
Intrigued, whatever.
Yeah, because Roseanne, in the early seasons, I didn't watch the last few seasons when it went left, but in the early seasons, Roseanne was a good show. It was smart. It was well-written.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny.
Covered. It was very topical. Covered what was going on.
Yeah, it was very topical.
Mm-hmm.
And before I even got a chance to turn, John Goodman had me laughing. And I was like, okay, I'm going to watch. And I'm so torn because obviously I'm really not fucking with Roseanne Barr right now at all. But Sarah,
now, why are you not fucking with Roseanne?
Because she's a hardcore Trump supporter, like hard.
But
like
I thought that she's not a Trump supporter in real life. I thought it was just the character on the show.
No, she is in real life.
Oh, I thought the character on the show was a
no, she is in real life, which is why people are side-eyeing Roseanne coming back, because they know the assumption is that she's going to carry that into the show, which she did. The Conners are Trump supporters, but Roseanne Barr is a Trump supporter. Like, oh, she actually is. No, she's actually a Trump supporter. Okay. But Sarah Gilbert is mad liberal. I'm assuming John Goodman is, but I don't really know. Mm. And Homegirl who plays
Lori Metcalf.
Right, Lori Metcalf. So, and I mean, obviously Sarah Gilbert is like a fucking open ass, like she's married to Linda Perry, for God's sake. You know, so anyway, and Wanda Sykes is a writer on the show. So I was like, all right, let me see what it is. And I'm torn because yes, the Conners did vote for Trump. And kind of like when Will and Grace came back, this first episode was, well, it was two episodes. The very first episode was super political. Like, you find out that Roseanne and Jackie haven't been speaking for a year, and you don't know why, and then it comes out it's because Jackie was a Hillary supporter,
and Roseanne was a Trump supporter. Okay.
And, like, Jackie comes to the door in, like, a pink pussy hat. You know, like, all that type of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because DJ's married to a black girl and has a black daughter, and not, like, a little mixed curly-head daughter, like a black daughter.
Okay.
Darlene's son is exploring his gender identity and like wearing girls' clothes to school, and they're figuring out like how to deal with that. Is he getting bullied? Dan's kind of on the fence about it, but he's trying to be supportive in his own, like, you know, white man from a certain socioeconomic background type way. Roseanne is super supportive. You know, obviously, like we said, Jackie is a Hillary supporter. So you're actually getting a kind of balanced point of view, you know?
Yeah, you're getting a lot of viewpoints.
Right, you're getting a lot of viewpoints. And also, like, DJ's married to a black woman, but his wife is still deployed. He just came home from Syria, so you still got that, you know?
Also, his wife hasn't been on yet.
No, but it's allegedly, there was an episode in the original Roseanne where DJ was in a school play with a black girl and he went and kissed a black girl. That's the girl he married.
Okay.
And like, so it's interesting because I don't, aside from actually invoking Trump's name, and they never did say Trump. They never actually did say Hillary either. The only name they actually used was Linda Steins, weirdly. And there was one Make America Great Again joke. But aside from that, I don't know that the Connors are any different. Like, they've always kind of been, they've always been that family, which was part of what made them real, right? Like, as much as you kind of like them, they also, they're not bastions of liberalism and
yeah, they had, they always had, they all had different viewpoints.
Yeah. So, I mean, the show was good. I'm not anxious to support Roseanne, but I know enough about the other cast members to be very curious as to how they're going to make this work. So I think so. Like, it was, I really almost hate saying it. It was good. Like, it was good. And I don't, and the chemistry between them still works and the writing is still sharp. But I'm going to let it rock and I'm going to see how, because the whole thing is, oh, they're giving, you know, the MAGAs their own little sitcom to normalize their bullshit.
But they're really not, though.
They're really not, though. But, I mean, but it kind of all, but at the same time, it is very much a all sides matter type situation. All points of view matter type thing. But that's also real in family dynamics. Like, at least they're having arguments about, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's interesting. The only difference between this and another, I mean, shit, on Will and Grace, what's her name? Karen. Karen is a Trump supporter. So the only difference, like, what's, there is no difference. You know what I mean? Except that Karen is an ancillary character instead of being the main character, whereas the Connors are the main characters and everybody else is ancillary. Like, it's the same kind of dynamics.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm a Hulu it. I guess probably on Hulu, one of those. There's some, or just on demand. It actually, I'll check it out and see what's about. I was never really into the original show, but I'm willing to give this a shot. You know what I mean? You know, what's it called? Married to the Medicines is going off the air, and
you need something else to watch.
I got some ruins. Shy done gone home. So yeah, you know, so I need I got some time to fill. I wanted to give
My last shout out, and this might be same as yours, I'm sorry. Linda Brown, who is the famous student in the Brown versus the Board of Education case.
Yeah, I was gonna mention
integrated
her too.
The school system, passed away yesterday at 76. Just wanna shout her out as we're in the middle of schools trying to resegregate, frankly. We're about to be back in this shit, but yeah, 76, like that's how short a time period ago all of that was.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think the thing about Linda Brown, I think that a lot of people don't really know is, first of all, the Brown wasn't really her. The Brown was her father. He was the right one named in the lawsuit. It wasn't her. Obviously, you have the same last name, but, her parents, like Linda Brown, you know, she grew up in Topeka, Kansas in probably was the 40s, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, she was born in 43, so really the 50s. And so there was a lot of she grew up around a lot of white kids, you know what I mean? She wasn't like, you know, just kind of like this huge, you know, in this huge black neighborhood. So, and I read about it, it's like the reason she wanted to go to the white school was simply because she wanted to go to school with her friends. It turned into something else. But her initial reason was, as a child, was like, well, Susie and Bobby and them go there and we play together all the time. I want to go to school with my friends. I don't really know the kids at the black school. You know what I'm saying? So, and that was her parents
thing
was like,
it
turned into something else. Yeah, her parents is like, well, we don't live over there. So like, she don't know them. And obviously it turned into a whole other thing, but, you know, it kind of morphed into, you know, this huge, decision, which, you know, in 60 years later, in hindsight, you know, it's kind of questionable whether it was for the best, you know, right, in some ways, you know what I mean? You know, obviously the black schools at the time were not getting the proper supplies and the proper funding and all of that stuff, which is very important. But on the other side, I think we've talked about this on the show before too, like, you know, there was a ton of black teachers and, you know, black principals and black administrators and everybody. So like these young black kids are being taught by their own who obviously had a little more of a vested interest, a lot more of a vested interest in these kids being educated and doing well. And it's very interesting, like, if you talk to a black man or woman of a certain age, which is Linda Brown's kind of age, like that late 60s to 80 kind of age,
right,
like, for the most part, they speak very well, They usually have really good handwriting penmanship, you know, and grammar, because they were taught by young Black teachers. And, right. And there was a connection there with, I think, with their teachers who kind of pushed them to kind of excel in their studies. And then once the, you know, it kind of shifted into integration, I think a lot of that went away and kids, you know, it turned into another thing where kids are kind of being just pushed through, or Black kids obviously being disciplined more than white kids, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm painting with a really broad brush, but that Brown versus White education thing, I think, it's a very interesting case, because again, I don't know if integration, you know, separate but equal, wasn't really a good thing in some ways. I don't know. I mean, what's your thing?
I mean, I can see the points. I mean, obviously, it's hard for me to speak on this from any kind of personal point of view, because
yeah, it's not, you know. For one thing, but you can probably speak on enough from your, obviously, none of us, from our person, but you could talk about, I bet your grandmother probably had great penmanship. You know what I'm saying?
No, my grandmother had excellent. Well, also, I come from a family of Black educators, right? My great grandfather was one of the first Black school superintendents in South Carolina. My grandmother had 12 siblings, and pretty much all of them went to college. And
you know what I'm saying?
If they didn't, it was because they didn't want to. They all had the opportunity to go to college, which
and they were, I'm sure, all taught by Black.
Well, they all. Well, most of them went to South Carolina State. So yeah,
I mean, but even, I mean, in public school, I'm saying.
Well, yeah, because they were in the South, so
yeah, but that's my point.
They went to the Black schools, so yeah, exactly. They were well educated, excellent penmanship, and even when my grandmother retired and moved back down South, she and a bunch of people like got together to preserve the school that they grew up in and make it a community center. And they still did reunions and all that stuff. But I was going to say, I grew up mostly going to, like, you know, people still grow up going to mostly Black schools. Like, I have friends who went to mostly Black schools, but they think Black educators, Black whatever. And I went to mostly white schools for my entire life, like even, you know, middle school, high school, whatever. But I do remember that wherever I went to school, the black teachers, whether I had them, like somebody asked me if I had any Black teachers, and I couldn't really remember because the Black teachers in my schools took ownership of everybody, whether they taught you or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can only remember a couple of teachers from high school and middle school, but I remember the Black faculty because they made sure that they were always checking on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely see the argument for, you know, the fact that there was, you know, excellence in Black teachers, because that's the same thing that the HBCUs were saying. And, you know, in Tell Them We Are Rising, they were talking about how more and more Black people in academia want to go to white schools instead of coming to the HBCUs.
To the Black schools.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I do think there is something to be said for, you know, us kind of diluting our quality of excellence and attention to community and investment in our specific futures by going out into, I don't want to say assimilate because that's not the right word, but you know what I mean.
But integrate. But, integrate yeah, is really more the word than assimilate.
Yeah, by integrating, but also, you know, where's the line? If we say that we're okay with going back to having Black schools and white schools, then how does that stop us from not reversing the clock all the way back the way a Jeff Sessions is trying to do or something. You know what I mean? It's just, it's hard to say you want it in some areas and not in others.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't saying I wanted it back.
I know you're not saying that. I'm just saying.
It was an interesting dynamic that got changed. And you could say, I don't know, in the long term, if it was all for the better. What you think, bro?
That was also where educators could support a family. I just don't say that, but go ahead.
I mean, I kind of agree. I mean, I definitely feel like obviously desegregation had unintended consequences, and some of those unintended consequences were that institutions and structures and business institutions that we had were basically dismantled. You know, when our funds were accepted elsewhere, we went elsewhere. So, you know, Miss Mary might have been a seamstress and, you know, Mr. John was a tailor.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the only place you can come and shop. And so that's where you went. And now you can go down
to Goldberg's department store. Exactly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it all kind of changed. And I think school sort of fell in line with that. I mean, for me, I had a very I had a very unique experience, and I've talked about this before. I haven't gone to public schools in New York. We went to a super pro-black school, mm-hmm. and it's so pro-black that I don't even know that some of the things that we were being taught in the curriculum and some of the things that were occurring would even fly now, especially as Bed-Stuy has changed.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean that. Like, dude, there was no school on Black Solidarity Day.
I don't even know what Black Solidarity is.
You would get a letter would come home. They would say, you know, while this is not a holiday, none of the faculty will be in school.
What is Black Solidarity? When is that?
I can't remember. I don't remember.
Isn't it like
the
Juneteenth or some shit? Or some it's shit something, made it, up?
No. Black Solidarity Day is an actual real day. It is not a holiday. It's not a holiday. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, because again, this was like 1983. Saying like, it's basically like solidarity. It's showing solidarity. You're supposed to shop black and buy, you okay. know, like.
Buy black.
Yes. It's that sort of, it's almost like a day of black celebration.
Okay.
You know, if any listeners out there, if I'm incorrect, please obviously, you know, correct us, but we didn't go to school that day. I knew who Manta Musa was. We had, you know, art, African art, there was a certain level of history that we were taught and in a way that we were taught. I did not have a white teacher. I had one white teacher in public school, in grade school, I should say.
Okay.
I did not have it in the fifth grade. So from K through four, all black. I had a white teacher in the fifth grade, a Hispanic teacher in the sixth grade, and my junior high school, again, all black deans, principals, heads of school. Like it was not like the men and the women, I mean, but the men that I saw in schools were not men who were just pushing a broom.
Right. Yeah,
they were men that were in charge. They wore suits. They, you know, enacted discipline. They mm-hmm. talked to us. They dealt with us in a certain way. When I went to high school, there were fewer of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when I transferred back to my zone district, because again, it's super black, you know, and again, there were basically no white teachers. It was all white faculty, all black faculty. So again, there's a sense of community. You know, you're going to be less prone to act a certain way because, you know, Ms. Brown saw your mother at the Pathmark.
Exactly.
Right. Told her, you've been showing your ass.
Exactly.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
And your mom walk in the house, you get your ass beat, you don't even know what happened.
You don't even know what happened, right? So there was a certain level of community that I think that gave. And, you know, for me, it was also, you know, like, and for me as a parent, I also understood that diversity in terms of race, but also in terms of socioeconomic was a very important thing that I wanted my kids to have and experience. I did not want them to grow up and be in a bubble and live in a bubble and expect the world to be, you know, basically a microcosm of what these private institutions were.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait, I looked up Black Solidarity Day. Apparently it's still a thing in some circles. So Black Solidarity Day was created in 1969 as a day nationally observed by African American men, women, and students. It always occurs the Monday before elections take place. And originally the event brought Black people together to discuss their political status and the direction in which their future was going. Discussion is important to Black Solidarity Day, as well as the concept of it as a day of absence during which Black people do not attend school or work and try to avoid making purchases and spending money throughout the day. So this is, I guess, where we need to go back to. This is kind of what we were trying to do.
Kind of showing the Black economic power.
Yeah, yes. With Bank Black before Bank Black.
And let me just say, too, and not to veer off, because I know we're going off with this a little bit. The administrators of the schools that I attended in Brooklyn in District 16, Chris Posadix, Junior High School 35, and then eventually Boys and Girls High, these were all these were people of a certain age. These were the children of that civil rights movement. These right. were the kids who were in college. These were the, you know, like, they were very, very conscious about everything. And so, again, it would not be uncommon for them to have had, you know, have pictures of them at the March on Washington.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
having been at protests, or he was at the sit-in at so-and-so.
Yeah, yeah. Or, when, or somewhere where Malcolm was, or Dr. King, or whatever.
All of that. All of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, again, I just wanted to bring that up, because I think, obviously it's sad that Linda Brown passed away at, you know, not a young age, but she wasn't, I mean, 76 is not, like, ancient, you know, so... and also just goes to show that it wasn't that long ago when all that stuff happened. It wasn't like it was 500 years ago. It was like, it's a very short period of time when schools were segregated and other things. So I just wanted to bring that up. Also wanted to say, RIP very briefly to, Queen Latifah's mom, Rita Owens, who, passed away after, a long battle with illness.
Scleroderma.
Yeah, is that a heart? Is that a heart illness?
Well, it's an autoimmune disease that I think attacks your organs and arteries.
Okay,
I might be half making that up, but in her case, it presented itself as heart trouble.
Okay. I only met her. I definitely can't say I knew her. Only met her a couple of times over the years, but one time in particular, got chances like an extended period of time with her when we met and talked for a long time. It was like a music? It was like Jack the Rapper or something, and we just sat and talked. Me, her, Shakim, and I think Latifah was there as well, and you know, some other flavor and the people. We just sat and talked for a long time, and she's really, 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 really nice lady. Like, really nice lady. Very well educated, well poised, very positive, great energy. She was like a very nice person. So I just wanted to say, you know, rest in peace, and our condolences to Dana and her family. I want to let's get a couple of let's get a couple of TV things out of the way. So I know Bruh is chomping at the bit to discuss this Roxanne Shanté movie.
I'm not chomping.
Yeah, nigga was on Twitter like, "Hey, who gonna be for real about this goddamn movie? When can we talk serious about this goddamn movie?" So
I like the movie.
I did too. We're gonna get into it. So Roxanne Shanté, for those who don't know, I think everybody does, but for those who don't know, was a she's not dead, so now say was, but she was a female MC in the 80s, during kind of like the, wasn't the beginning of rap, but it was definitely like the second phase where, you know, rap started to get like radio play and some songs started to take off and become like phenomena. You know, obviously Sugar Hill Gang and then The Message, and then, you know, her song, Roxanne by UTFO, and then her answer to Roxanne became like this kind of phenomena. This Roxanne phenomenon, because it was UTFO, it was her, it was Sparky D.
And it was 82 Roxanne.
Yeah, it was Roxanne's Revenge, the Spanish girl. I can't remember her name now. So it was a huge thing, but her song was massive. And first of all, I would bet anybody that she ain't make no money off them sales, because it was really the Wild Wild West back then. I don't know.
That's kind of what it clearly pointed to.
Her publishing alone, if you know, taken care of properly back then, should have carried her way out of her living situation. But that's a whole different conversation. So the movie basically just covers her life from probably age like 13-ish to probably like 18 or 19 at the most. So it's like a 4 or 5 year period of her life. When she made this record and the kind of the effects of making the record and her living situation and everything. I enjoyed the movie. I thought the girl who played her did a great job. I thought Nia Long did a great job.
Long did that shit. Oh
yeah,
my God.
I thought she did a great job.
She was amazing.
I always forget how to pronounce his name. Mahershala Ali, I believe. It's like Mahershala Ali. I mean, he did it because they kind of played, you know, I've seen him kind of
play
that.
The character type.
Character type, you know what I'm saying? But I really thought the girl who played Roxanne was great. And I really thought Nia Long was like fucking excellent.
To me, his Marshala's character is who we would usually see Wood Harris play.
Yeah, there you go. Yep, there you go.
Like,
you
know, he usually would have been. Like, I almost was looking at him and he looked like Wood Harris.
To me, it's almost like Wood Harris should have played this role.
Yeah.
You know, with the Kango and the kind of menacing and all that. But bro, let me let you jump in, man. Like, let me tell me what your issues was.
Well, first off, I thought that there were some incredible performances. Obviously, Nia Long stood out. Mm-hmm. It was very reminiscent to me of Denzel in Training Day, in that you felt like, oh shit, she knows that person.
Absolutely.
Like, she is way too nuanced in this.
Yes.
She like, either that lady is in her family.
Yeah.
Or she's seen that growing up. There's absolutely just no way to capture that the way she did.
Absolutely.
I thought the young lady who played Shantae was great. I thought the acting was actually really good. And my favorite character, I can't even remember her name, but it was the young
her friend.
Her sidekick.
I think her name was Rakia. I believe it was Rakia.
She was great.
She was the best hype man ever.
She was on screen.
She was awesome.
She was fluent. She was excellent. To me, that young lady has a real, I mean, not just her, but that young lady has a future.
Mm-hmm. No, she's dope.
Well, also, whoever the chick she played, I was like, this is the best hype man, road manager, fucking everything ever in life. Like,
ever.
She was amazing.
But she played, not Django for Tangent, but like, she was excellent. I agree with both of you, like 10,000%. It's like she gave us like that real, like, project best friend.
Yes.
Like, well, project performances.
That project, you go over the project, so that's your best friend. That's exactly what it looks like.
But the project authenticity in this was, let me be more specific, the late 70s and 80s project authenticity.
Yeah, they nailed it.
Was so real. Like, a lot of people might think, oh, she was over exaggerating her accent.
I'm from
that
the project,
so
literally of that era. So this is absolutely, now, here are my issues. My issues with the movie was that I did not think it was not a great story. It did
correct.
Not.
I agree
it,
with
was,
that.
It was very. It was very choppy, the way it was made, and it felt very heavy-handed from her as an executive producer. And let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. I think that you have to. First of all, I think biopics, by and large, have changed since Ray. The way we expect our biopics now are very, very different. And while we saw the pain in, you know, some of the issues that she faced coming up, she was very innocent in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of reeked of not having had another source outside of her.
Mm. Right.
To write this movie. So it felt very heavy-handed.
Agreed. Very much like I was just a little kid.
Yes.
I don't know better.
Yes. Every aspect of the movie, made her sympathetic. I mean, listen, it's very, I thought that they did two things incredibly well in telling the story. One was how predators seek and start to groom young girls.
Yes.
Right.
And it started with the money in the store. It started like, it's like, I'm not going to go all the way, but I'm just going to keep.
I'm setting it up.
Yes. I'm going to keep like when he moves on an elevator,
mm-hmm.
when he's like he's, you can see the pressure giving mm-hmm. her the cell phone when she's out there by herself. Like it was really like, okay, I can get her.
Yep, exactly.
And let me just
bide my time.
Exactly. You know, and there's a lot of filthy niggas out there like that.
But which was interesting to carry that point on, because I think that, and that's why I thought that scene with Nia Long when they went to the little Chinese restaurant was so pivotal, because when you're watching the movie, I think it was almost easy to kind of forget how young she actually still was.
Yes.
So right. when Nia was like, motherfucker, she's only 16 years old. It's like, holy shit. Like this guy's, so basically this guy's been fucking around with this girl, like doing little things. So she's like, them like 12 or 13. And then now when he goes for it and says, okay, now I'm gonna start like fucking you and make you my girl. She's like in like 11th grade. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but she wasn't a grown-ass woman. But also moved out of the house at 12. Like that was what
that was crazy.
Like when she was celebrating her birthday by herself and the candles said 14, I was like, holy shit. And you're already like out of school, you're on the streets, you're doing what you gotta do.
And that sort of leads me to the second part that they captured incredibly well, which was the very intense and often combative relationships between Black mothers and their eldest daughters.
Yeah.
Especially when they were young mothers.
They really captured that. I've seen that.
We've all seen that too.
Yeah.
We've all seen that. When they make the oldest daughter like the surrogate mom.
Yes.
When the oldest daughter gets close to the age where they got pregnant, all of a sudden it's a challenge for womanhood in the house. And so everything the oldest daughter does is like, oh, you want to be grown?
Yes. It's a resentment factor. It's showing power, all those sorts of things. And listen, I don't want to, and I'm going to say this because I want to also be clear. Like, I don't want to disparage Shantae because that's not my goal at all. Right. But she also, like, we cannot ignore the fact that she has a history of telling
stories,
not just stories, like sticking with it, like full, complete, you know, very complicated and very meticulous lies. Like they were lies. They weren't like exaggeration. It wasn't like I went, you know, to Cornell up until my junior year or my senior year. Right. I'm just 2 credits shy. Like, nigga, you never even went there.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you just made some...
I think that's why they probably stopped the movie where they did. I saw some people say that they wished it had gone further. And I think they probably stopped it where they did because as soon as you get into the meat of her career... then shit gets really sticky, right?
And it's like, and can we really, okay, guys, can we be honest here about those two albums that she released? Can we be honest?
They were whack.
Listen, I don't want to, I'm saying, I'm not here to disparage her. I'm not here to take away the fact that she made an incredible record. It was a pivotal moment in hip hop history.
That's her legend, that one record.
But that's what it is, guys. And we keep trying to, like, I don't want to keep trying to make people something that they're not. Like the dude who was on Twitter the other day, like talking about, you know, Wendy's using Biggie's record was beef to sell hamburgers is an insult to Black rage. What are you talking about? I just feel like as history progresses, as the further and further we get away from things, that we have such a revisionist history. And because there's so few people to almost challenge or say, nah, that's not exactly what was happening.
Yeah, it's not really how it went down.
Like, there's, like, you know, listen, it was cute to have the little Nas cameo and you know, and all of that sort of stuff. And I get it. You know, he's from there having Biz and those guys in there. But listen, the movie overall, it was not very good. It was short. It was decently produced, meaning it, you know, it looked good. And they sort of captured the energy of those particular eras that they were in.
Right.
But it wasn't a great story. It really wasn't a great story.
I can agree with that. But you know what? I think it was a good culture piece. And I think that's what drew people to it. Because I was riveted the whole time. But you're right. The story was a little incomplete. It took me a minute to figure out what story they were telling. And honestly, it wasn't until the end when I was like, oh, this was about how hard it was in those years between the Roxanne record and her getting her, like, this is about her struggle. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't until they got to the end point and I saw where they were going to end it that I was like, oh, this is about her struggle. That's what this is about. This is about, y'all don't know what was going on at home, and mom was an alcoholic, and I was out here in these streets, and I was getting my ass beat, and I had a baby at 16 and all that shit. But, like I said, but I didn't know that while the story was happening. I didn't know what story they were telling.
Yeah.
But also the cultural beats were so on point that made it enjoyable. Like, the boosting out of Bloomingdale's, the hood shit, you know.
All of that, the motorbikes.
The nigga pulling up on the moped.
All of that shit. And that's what I'm saying by it was a well-produced movie. They put a lot of thought into that. Even the way the setup was with the park jam, right? Just seeing all of those wires. You can go back to that if you've ever experienced that, right? So there's something very nostalgic about that, and there's something very special about that, right? But again, like, to say, well, I never got any money off that record. Well, we don't even know if Marley got any money off that record, because you guys probably did that shit shotgun, threw it out there.
It definitely sold Marley out.
And got sued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in the game, right? You threw a record out there, you tried to go gorilla, and you know, because I think that's Full Forces did the beat for the UTFO. Mm-hmm. And you know they don't fuck around at all
with their money,
with their publishing.
Not even a little bit.
That shit's really putting food on the table.
Yeah,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So I say all that to say, the entire movie, she is a pedestrian in her life. Right. Things are always happening to her.
Yeah, never her fault.
Yes, she is never doing anything.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what I feel like is really sort of, you know, look, I'm happy that they sold this movie. I think it is a win for the culture. I just think it's a bad movie. This isn't something that I would say I'm going to watch again. But I'm happy that she's gotten, you know, she's able to go out here. Listen, if this gives her another, you know, 18 months or 2 year run where she can, you know, maybe do a record out there, you jump on stage a couple times, get some bread, you know, relive that portion of her past, then great for her. You know, no shots. But I mean, this wasn't a great movie, and it's not like I don't think she had the pioneer level of history that I think people are presenting this as.
Well, I like The Morning. I definitely like The Morning You. I wanted to just say one more thing about the movie. I thought that they covered what you don't really kind of fully flesh out and see usually is they really showed that the reason her mom was like that was because, you know, she had a broken heart. And she was depressed. Like, that was depression, because I didn't catch till later that apparently when she was sitting at the table with that woman, that was the first time her mother ever drank.
Yeah.
That
was the first time she ever drank.
Because the woman says, take a drink, it'll make you, it'll help the pain, it'll help ease the pain.
Yeah.
And she never turned away. Basically, every scene after that, you can actually see it.
Yeah.
If you actually watch it, if you watch it again, you can literally see even like her makeup, mm-hmm. her look. Her look becomes disheveled after that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not
sleeping.
Yeah, she's not really kind of together as she was in the initial.
Well, I definitely caught that she was drunk all the time. I definitely caught that she became an alcoholic after that point when dude took her to, like, $20,000 in 1980 or 78, whenever the fuck that was. That's a lot
like
of money.
200 grand now.
When you living
in the projects, nigga.
Here you go. What you gonna say, bro?
I think they put a little something on it. I think they put a little something on that one.
I don't think it was 20.
Yeah, that's valid.
But this is what I'm saying, man. This is what I'm saying.
You, 20 is you a
gotta,
lot.
You gotta
that's a
take.
Lot of money.
I feel like, yo, nigga, 20 grand right now is getting you a down payment on a crib.
Exactly. 20 and 19 something.
You had 20 grand back then, nigga, in the shoebox, and your ass.
You had 20 grand in the shoe. Like, my nigga, you had 20. Like, there
you
is
could buy
no,
the house. You could buy
you
the house.
You could have bought the house. Like, why didn't you buy the house?
Like, I'm saying to myself, like, okay, nigga, the house can't be but 65.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Back in 83.
Because they probably weren't moving nowhere but to, like, Woodside or something.
No, it was And so to me,
$20,000, they could have gone to Jamaica Estates. They could have lived next to the McDowells.
Word. But that's my point, right? Like that's what I was saying about some of this story. You have to take with a grain of salt. Yeah. Because I feel like she sort of puts a little something extra on it. Now her mama, I definitely believe that shit happened to them. Because I think it was some real foul niggas back then, same as it is now, right? Yeah. And I definitely, her mom probably hit him off with 4 or 5 thousand.
Yeah.
That's and what, that nigga, which and sounds.
That nigga, but it still off. Probably was all she had.
It was all she, like, my point is, I don't want to harp on the number as much as the sentiment was that she had given him all she had.
Yeah.
Right? And I get, and he just took off and he left her and the kids fucked up. And I get that. But like, it wasn't 20 grand. Like, I'm almost positive it wasn't 20 grand.
Yeah.
And she did seem like, even through her alcoholism, it was like a tough love mom, right? Like, she was that project mom where she going to cuss you out. But she was cussing you out in love, like that, like that type of shit.
There's an abusive parental dynamic that I think takes place. I think because there's also a fear that I don't want y'all to have this life.
If it means
I'm gonna make this life so bad.
That you just get
away from here, like from this shit, or you never, you know, have to live this experience again. I mean, I get it. I mean, you know, like, she literally has this entire movie, and there is not one
father figure. Like,
not just a father figure, but there's just not one guy. There's just not one guy. Not a friend. Not like there's nobody. Yeah. Like everybody shitted on you.
Honestly, the only one that didn't shit on her was Marlon.
No, she does.
Marley shitted on her too.
Marley shitted on her. She made it.
Marley told her she was acting like a hoe. Yeah. And said that he wasn't going to DJ her shit no more and took her records and broke out. And also didn't defend her when that nigga said she wasn't getting no money.
And that wasn't even it. They was intimating that was Marley shit.
Right.
Like, they got
like Marley money, set that
and
up.
Right when I was about to give you your money...
The money know, disappeared.
And then Marley just sat there. Like, come on, man. I thought that was... I just kind of felt like that was a little cheesy. But I don't know their relationship like that. But again, God bless him. You know, I hope she has a great...
I mean, Marley mom made jingling babies.
Yeah, Marlon's fine.
I ain't gonna walk away mad at Marley. No, I mean, I ain't gonna walk away mad at Marley because...
Yeah, he's fine.
Marley made Tiffany. We all right over here.
Marley made check out my melody. I mean, Marlon is fine. Trust me.
No, I know he's fine. I'm saying I'm not walking away mad at Marley
Biz album, Kane, he's a legend. He's a legend.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention Virgil Abloh real quick, becoming the head designer for... Louis Vuitton men's. I thought it was Louis Vuitton Corsivo. It's actually Louis Vuitton men's for now, I guess, which is still, in fashion world, you know, an historic thing because they've never had a black fashion designer be the head of a major fashion house. You know, they've done deals with other black fashion designers and stuff like that, but actually the actual head of black, I believe he's the first one, if I'm not mistaken. And he's a pretty young guy. I think he's in his probably he's in his 30s. He's in his 30s, but he's not as old as Ye. Like, I think Ye'll be like 40, 39 this year. I think I think Virgil's probably like 34 or 5. Okay. It's just like, you know, it's an incredible, feat he pulled off. And it also goes to show the power of streetwear and streetwear culture and black culture, and how it's now the fashion houses are all just full on embracing it and, you know, exploiting it.
But is this hype beasting?
Well, that's the thing. The jury's out on whether this is hype beasting or not. Because Virgil, he's been very successful with Off-White. He's also a lot of people don't know this, he's also a graphic designer. So he designed a lot of the stuff that when they were saying that Kanye was designing people's album covers, like the 2 Chainz album covers, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That was actually Virgil doing all that stuff.
Got it.
So he's very creative, but is it Hypebeast thing? Like, again, the jury's out. I think, I don't know. I don't, because, you know, if you look, okay, if you kind of try to do an analogy towards records, right? It's like taking, let's see, who's had a pretty decent kind of independent record label?
Is it like taking Drake?
The guy that runs OVO was a guy named Oliver, mm-hmm. with Drake. It's like taking Oliver and making him the head of Sony. It's like, okay. Wow, that's a huge leap.
You know, right. You know,
like, or even now, like taking Rosenberg, which actually happened, who was
and making him the head of Def Jam.
Making head of Def Jam. It's like, woo, that's pretty big leap.
I don't know, but Rosenberg been doing, I mean, granted, he's been doing one part of it, but he's been doing it for a long time. So
yeah, but exactly, but what you see, you nailed it. He's been doing one part of it.
And right.
And Virgil's been doing one part of it. He's done it very successfully, but it's one part. We'll see if he can run a whole house. I'm happy for him regardless, and I know one thing. His first fashion show is going to be the biggest fashion show of all time. Legitimately. Like, everybody and their grandma's going to try to go, so. We'll see. I know I'm gonna get off this topic because I know bro don't even give a flying fuck.
He's like, about who? Who you talking about?
You're like, who that boy you talking about? Virgil.
He like Vincent Price.
Who that? Annie and them boys.
Virgil's barbecue. They working with Louis Vuitton.
Nah, I mean, I know who he is.
That funny clothes looking boy.
Yeah, God bless him, man. I'm happy for him. I mean, them niggas don't make nothing that fit me, but God bless him.
I just want to mention that. Let's talk real quick about the Married to Med finale. Did you see it?
There was another part of this bitch.
Yo,
part three.
Yeah,
it was the last.
Let me go on mute because I ain't watched this.
Okay, so part three came on last, Friday, and then repeated on. I don't even repeat it on Sunday no more. Whatever, regardless. So part three was maybe the best. I think it might have been the best one of the three. Part three was phenomenal. This is as far as a television viewing situation. It was like wow, because they basically gathered round and counseled Cecil and Simone to try to make their marriage work. What'd you think about that, bro?
I thought that I felt cheated, and I'm going to tell you why.
Here you go.
I felt cheated because I wanted them to get divorced. If you ever listen to the show, you know I like Cecil.
Yeah, you love Cecil and Simone, yeah.
But I felt like they let that cat out the bag with the reunion that they were getting divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And no one ever countered that. Like clearly they were not getting divorced.
So you think it was fake?
I don't think that that was fake. I just felt cheated by them allowing that to run when that wasn't the case.
Mm.
That's all.
So
I mean,
you don't think they were actually going to ever get a divorce? Are you saying, like, when the show came on, like I say, they spun it like they was getting divorced when in the show they weren't. They weren't.
They weren't. I see what getting you're divorced. And so that was my whole thing. I mean, listen, do I think that they were probably on the verge of divorce? Sure. A picture of the friend Tammy surfaced online.
Yeah. Yeah.
Recently, and you know, kind of like I said, I think Simone was really quick with the, you know, not feeling threatened about this woman.
No, Tammy's not, I mean, no disrespect, but she's not,
she's not a threat.
She's not a classically attractive woman.
Yeah. I actually felt bad for Tammy
in a way. I don't know her. We can't paint, but in that situation, because Simone let the cat out of the bag that Tammy came to their house on Christmas Day stayed for 8 days, which is insanity. That's insanity. Yeah. And especially because she lives in Atlanta. So it's like you could just drive home. It's ain't got to fly in the plane. But what that also told me is I feel like Tammy might just be like without family and super lonely.
I think that that's it. And I think that she may have. I mean, listen, to have anyone stay in your home for 8 days that you can't
stay. That's craziness.
That's wild. Or if you can't stay, that's crazy. That's wild to me. Like, yeah. I don't want to. There's no.
I don't have family stay in my house for eight motherfucking
days.
My mother has never stayed in my house for 8 days. Real.
I have gone to the most beautiful villa in Montego Bay and I'm not still, nigga, by day five, I'm like, all right, nigga, I'm ready to go home.
Pack up these bags. We out of here. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what that was about. But now, what'd you think about Quad and Greg?
I mean, Greg is a fool, man. Greg is a classic case of a dude with zero game, with zero ability to see the forest for the trees, not really knowing how to move. Like, he's like a lot of these guys, man. Like, they try to swim in waters that they ain't equipped for. Like, that game ain't for you, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you going out to Vegas. All right, man, you go out there and fuck with them real hoes, man.
Yeah.
And, like, they will bleed you, my nigga. Like, this ain't, like, dry, nigga. Like, a bad weekend in Vegas will have you in shambles.
Yeah, have your whole shit fucked up. Checking and savings.
Stop. Just stop. Full stop. You ain't equipped. You clearly ain't equipped for that. You clearly don't really kind of know how to move. And I'm also kind of like, yo, who is your friend that co-signing that?
You know what I read some blog or something. Apparently, blog, and I heard it from somebody else. Apparently, he's best buddies with that cat Will, the cat that Cynthia's dating on Real Housewives. That's his man.
That nigga suspect.
So they say that them niggas be running together in Atlanta.
Yeah, well, you know, look,
allegedly, I guess.
Yeah, allegedly, yeah. And, you know, look, God bless him. I think Quad and Greg need to stop this. There is no reason to keep going on in this relationship. It's just not.
Yeah, it's nasty and messy, and it's just not.
It's mean. It feels mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a trip that he kept trying to make excuses, like, for just blatantly getting caught out there. It's like, nigga, you got caught out there. Just own it. He blaming it on her for him doing some dumb shit.
Like, and then it was like, I didn't do nothing. Nigga, you was in the hotel room.
With your card down, nigga. You put your card down.
Like, I'm sitting here like, nigga, you put your card down? Like, what? Like, what 1997 play-ass move is this? What are we doing here?
You put your card down, then you leave the room, and of course, when checkout come, they slip a receipt under the door. They do that in every hotel. Now that you got the receipt with your name and your card. Nigga, like, what?
Backwards.
Ass backwards. So, and by the way, a piece to the psychiatrist who hit us today on Twitter.
Oh, she's not a psychiatrist. She works in the mental health field. But yeah, she was basically just saying, which I knew this and I don't know why I wasn't thinking about it, probably because I really wasn't listening last week and I don't really only half watched the show. But she was saying that Quad's husband, there's a difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist. The psychologist is who you go to for therapy, for discussion, you know, to talk about things, to get perspective. The psychiatrist just really gives you your meds. So we were talking about how it's amazing. What's Quad's husband's name?
Greg.
How Greg doesn't know how to communicate when he works in the mental health care profession, but that's because he is a psychiatrist. And he doesn't actually have to talk to patients aside from just making sure that their levels are correct.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so he's not the talking person. That's a psychologist.
He's not the one that does therapy and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's
no.
A psychologist who is
well,
not
listen, I actually did sort of understand that that there's a difference, but he's not like, I mean, I just couldn't take
some psychiatry course.
That's what I'm saying. He has to basic bedside manner would at least prepare you for some level of communication. That was my only point. So
yeah, I wanted to mention the March for Us real quick. It was huge March last. When was that? Saturday.
March for Life.
I thought it was March for Us.
March for Life.
March for Life. Okay.
March for Life.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure. I'm gonna confirm, but I'm pretty sure it's March for Life.
I thought it was March for Us. Okay. The big old march they had on Saturday. March for Life on Saturday with all the kids. It was a bit of, I don't know if controversy is the right term, but it definitely felt kind of,
yeah, March for Our Lives.
Okay. It was a different energy on it than we've seen, obviously, with Black Lives Matter and when black kids or adults get killed by usually by cops. It wasn't militarized like that. I mean, I guess there was some military presence out there, but it wasn't as militarized as our marches have been. It wasn't any violence.
It was more like the women's march. It was galvanized in a whole bunch of different major cities.
Yeah.
At one time with a bunch of speakers, and we actually haven't had any kind of BLM march on one day on a national level the way the Women's March and March for Our Lives has been able to do, in part because we haven't had the same level of support.
I mean, I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, just kind of getting the permits and the, you know, and
well, another, you kind of need to have some level of organization and money and fairness.
Yeah.
And so, who's in charge?
Yeah, I don't know. Black Twitter. So they had the march on Saturday. To the kids' credit, they recognized that that a lot of black and brown people and gay people and, you know, people that are in kind of a more minority position don't usually get the opportunity to have this type of, you know, kind of focus on themselves and everything. So they made sure there was a ton of black kids that spoke at this march. You know, it was a lot of gay kids spoke at the march. It was trans kids. It was like they made sure it was a very well-rounded representation all across the board. And they went in with that focus. I really believe that David Hogg kid, I really believe in 15 years or 20 years, that kid's going to be president. Like, he's so, like, fly with it, you know? I watched a little bit of the march. I was kind of running around, so I couldn't see much of it, but I saw clips later on in the evening, and there were some really good speeches given by these kids. You know, they said basically, because they're up there fearless. So they're basically saying everything that adults kind of should be saying, but, you know, are scared to say because they're scared of repercussions. What are your thoughts about the march?
I mean, I was not at home on Saturday, so I saw coverage after the fact as well. I mean, listen, I'm proud of Generation Y. They are they're the post 9/11 generation, so they grew up in a world of just a totally different political and social climate than even, you know, the millennials did. And activism is important to them. Like, it's one of their generational trademarks. And, you know, the kids from Parkland has been different from the jump. And I think we discussed that because these are clearly privileged kids. They're incredibly intelligent kids. And also, clearly they're getting support from the adults in their lives.
Yep.
Right. And that is important as well. And yeah, people have been rallying behind them in a way. And plenty of people have been bringing this up, like, yo, we see this with Black Lives Matter, and it's the same shit. You know what I mean? We're making the same argument that we don't want this level of force and militarization to be able to fall into the wrong hands. You know, the Alton Sterling verdict, I shouldn't call it the Alton Sterling, the verdict on the cops who killed Alton Sterling came down day before yesterday. And it was not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a few people were like, if you were supporting the march on Saturday, you need to be outraged about this shit. Like, don't you dare separate the two, which is true, right? And also, but, you know, I'm proud of the kids. I'm proud of the activism. I'm proud of the fact that even from an optics point of view, it's much harder to ignore these children than it is basically anybody else.
Yeah.
Which is just truth. But the GOP and the NRA are still massively assholes. Like, that's what I really can't get over. Like, how willing they are to talk shit about these kids. Like,
I agree with you, it's crazy. But what I just don't understand is, besides the craziness, is like, they're just not taking it serious that, yo, a lot of these kids
are going to be able to vote.
Yes, like this year, like a lot of them are 18, and obviously, and then a huge portion of them are going to be voting in 20.
Right.
So it's like, you're talking crazy about these kids, and they showed you from this march that they can galvanize and organize.
And organize, yeah.
So, like, what do you do? Are you really going to keep talking shit about these kids?
I think they actually are afraid, which is why they keep ratcheting it up. Like, they're taking, they're actually making personal attacks against the Parkland kids right now.
Yeah.
Even going in so far as to say, you know, if not for them, nobody would know their names, being the Parkland kids, which is insane. Like, yeah, that's fucking insane. And also, like, you're not even realizing that your argument doesn't work. It'll work for these dumbass people who think that somebody wants to actually abolish the Second Amendment altogether, which is the NRA's rhetoric. But, you know, to argue that these kids are too young to be politically involved, that means dumb. That these kids are too young to have your guns.
Exactly. Which is exactly.
Part of the argument, right? So it's like you want to fight for these kids being able to shoot and handle firearms, but you think they're not old enough to actually like have
to have political discourse.
Come on, man.
This is crazy. What do you think, bro?
I didn't watch the march.
Well, I'm going to give you another one then. Give me your take on Killer Mike.
Fuck that nigga.
Let me just start by saying, I think that Mike is one of the type of dudes, man, that, well, let's just start back. Mike made a video for the NRA.
Yes. With this black guy, I forget his name now, something noir or something. He's a black member of the NRA. He's a fairly young guy. I mean, not young. He's probably in his 30s. And he's a full-on NRA member. And so I guess the NRA is starting to push him out there a little bit to show that they're, you know, diverse and balanced, and they have black members as well. It's all bullshit. But go ahead.
Yes. And so Mike has, you know, really, in my opinion, sort of shifted from rapper to is he a panelist? Like, is he a professional panelist? Is he a professional speaker?
Is he a pundit? He's just a pundit,
I guess. Yeah, personality.
Is he an activist? I think he imagines himself to be an activist.
So basically, Mike used this opportunity, and in an interview that I saw, you know, he talks about basically most of the kids in school had a walkout. During the March for Our Lives as a part of the protest.
Yeah, it was like a couple of days before the march.
Yeah. And then Mike basically says to his children, basically, like, if you walk out of school, you can keep walking out of my house.
Yeah.
Which is like mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like you, I mean, listen, I'm not here to judge anyone's parenting. That just sounded crazy to me.
Yeah.
Then he said that his words were being used against him. It was sort of taken out of context, and he made this, you know, this long apology. Listen, the reality is I'm not that invested in Mike, but Mike is one of those guys who we see often, and they like to hear themselves talk.
Definitely.
And they often think that they're the smartest person in the room.
Definitely.
And that everything that they've said has been well thought out. Mike rubbed me the wrong way with his.
And that is profound. They think the shit they're saying is profound.
Yes, yes. And Mike did something when Bernie, during the election time, and, you know.
Bernie Sanders?
Yes, he was out here campaigning with Bernie, and he did this whole, you know, Bank Black movement.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a run on black banks. And we talked about that on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I, again, specifically said, because I was actually, during this time, I was actually having conversations with someone, you know, to open a pretty sizable account at a black bank.
Okay.
And I was doing some research, and I was like, wait a minute, like, why exactly am I doing this shit? Like, you guys aren't renegotiating terms with Ms. Shirley.
Yeah.
Like you're not giving... There's no preferential treatment to any of these small black businesses around here to put equity up. There's no refinancing programs. There's no financial literacy programs. You guys are not in any community centers. You guys are not like basically I'm taking my money and putting it in an institution that still operates under the guise of every white bank.
Yeah. And only difference is it's black owned, but I might as well go to Bank of America.
That was my point. Mm-hmm. And again, there was a major run. There was like a record number of accounts being opened and money being deposited. And we have not heard a peep.
Nothing.
Literally not a peep.
Not
from him, from anybody. It's like this idea that everyone just jumps from one thing to another. The pivot on you know, what they want to harp on and lock on to is just, it just changes, man. And
by the day.
I just, like, Mike, to me, Mike is in the Umar, Tariq Nasheed, and them sort of category, man. Like, you know, I ain't even mad. You know, like, y'all go do what y'all want to do, man. But
you know what Mike is? Mike is your cousin that come over to the house, you know, the cookout, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, whatever it is. He bring the family. He come in talking shit. You know, but you know, you love him because that's cousin Mike. But by an hour or two in after everybody eat, Mike start talking that shit.
Exactly.
Pissing everybody off. Trump ain't even that bad, really. And all that dumb shit, you know, just being what's it called? Just going against the grain.
A contrarian.
He's a nigga saying if y'all wasn't spending all your tickets to go see Black Panther, we could build our own Wakanda. He's
saying that. The worst thing about Mike, isn't even so much as that he's wrong, but because he has such a large platform from being an artist, and he's actually an articulate and great speaker. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a great orator. And what happens is that people are so mesmerized by that they don't even notice that it's bullshit.
Yeah, he's just talking shit. Like the
it's
nigga,
just bullshit.
Like even in this video, the nigga was like, they had guns in Wakanda? No, they didn't, nigga. What are you talking? Did you even see the movie? Obviously, you didn't even see the movie.
Those are the sorts of niggas that, this is why I put my headphones on in the barbershop. When niggas like that come in, headphones on. I don't even read the magazines no more. I don't even want the magazines no more. Keep that old Jet, nigga. Yeah, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that old Ebony.
The old Sports Illustrated.
Yeah,
you know
what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I don't want to see that shit. You know what I'm saying? But like that sort of dude, I honestly, they've become, I'm indifferent to them because I literally don't engage. I don't exhaust any energy, and I don't give any mental bandwidth to people that I just think are not smart.
Yeah, I got you. All right. Well, I just wanted to say that piece to the whole March thing. I just wanted to mention, it was one other thing I wanted to mention before we jump into the last topic. I just wanted to mention this interesting story about the Russians. Apparently, it's come out that they had built a number of black Tumblr accounts, more than 80 Tumblr accounts. And during the last, you know, couple of years of, you know, unrest because of cop killings and the election and all the things that were kind of going on, Black Lives Matter and so on, they were like, you know, basically out here like trying to, you know, cause ruckus and steer, and cause, you know, chaos within the young black community. It's kind of wild because, you know, you wouldn't expect them to kind of focus on black Tumblr, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of such a
I mean,
niche.
They were focused on
everything.
Everything, and also
they were thorough as fuck.
Also, Black Tumblr is full of a whole bunch of y'all, a whole bunch of them arguing niggas who was just talking about like Mike, absolutely, who just think that being contrarian makes them somehow elevated in thought.
It's a bunch of
self-described artsy Negroes and creative Negroes. So that's a perfect space to sow discord.
Yep. And women, men and women, both. You know, it was just kind of.
No, when I said Negroes, I meant
you
black
mean across
people.
The board. You mean across the board.
I mean black people. I mean actual Negroes.
Yeah.
It's a perfect place to sow discord.
Yep. Yeah. So it was just kind of interesting. You never know who's, when you're looking at these accounts on Tumblr or Black Twitter or whatever, like you don't, on Facebook, you don't know if it's a Sergey Veletnikov behind that shit. You know what I'm saying?
I just want to mention the Russians got at Atlanta this week.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah, they hacked some of the city's computer systems and shut down a few things. I think on a mild level, like clearly it wasn't like a full shutdown because
I feel like Greg, it was like a warning shot. Like,
yeah, Greg didn't believe it because he was like, no national news is covering it. And I was like, well, one national news outlet did cover it.
No. Because I saw a little press conference with Man Keisha.
The funny thing is that, and the ransom was due today. The ransom that the hackers asked for to release control of the systems was only like 50,000.
In Bitcoin, they wanted it in Bitcoin,
which I mean, I kind of get because Bitcoin can appreciate so massively quickly. Mm-hmm. But I know somebody was joking, like Keisha should send goons after these dudes just on GP for like asking for such a little amount of money. But to me, it doesn't seem like a warning shot. To me, it seems like maybe it's Russians, but it's not like the Russians. It's like some other ancillary Russians who just doing some shit to do it. Maybe it's I don't know.
Those fuck around and beat some of my kids, man. little Sergov and fuck around on their daddy.
Junior Russians.
Dead ass. Them some kids. They probably at the school. That shit probably traced back to high school somewhere.
It probably did that shit after they was playing Fortnite or some shit like that.
Right, because it's clearly play, right? Like you're gonna ask for $50,000, even in Bitcoin, $50,000.
Yeah, from a whole ass city.
From a whole major city.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I just wanted to mention that. Let's get on into your boy Tyrone Hankerson. Who is now what is his actual job? Is he a financial aid?
I don't know. I just know he worked in the financial aid office, but he's also still a full-time student.
Oh, I didn't realize he was a student as well. Okay.
He's a graduate student.
Oh, he's a grad student. Okay.
But he also went to undergrad at Howard.
Okay, at Howard University. The story broke today that between him and apparently six other people, they stole a total of I'm looking at the story right now. Should I just saw the number? Damn it. 1.something million dollars. Tyrone is credited for stealing, I think, $429,000.
Yeah, 400 or 460 some shit like that.
Yeah. So Tyrone has become the face of this story because
because the nigga put too much ammo out there for him to be the face of the story. Yeah, he gave us content
because he was stunting on the gram.
Stunting with
on another level.
In the middle. Like on this another level. Nigga was clearly trying to position himself as some kind of a tastemaker or influencer, which is really confusing to me because you're not going to make as much money as a tastemaker or influencer as you getting trying to look like a tastemaker and an influencer. But this nigga was living his entire best life. Entire.
OD'ing. Like, man, this nigga's like in Cuba. Like there's so many pictures of him up, like with very expensive clothing. You know, he looks like he's like modeling in some of these pictures. Like he looks like legit, like he's in a J. Crew ad or something. You know, like the man was going ham. He became a trending topic. He's still a trending topic as of right now. The jokes just kept coming.
Yeah, and, man's in fur coats and Gucci satchels. And writing Instagram posts about securing the bag. Yeah, and like smoking jackets and pictures where he's leaping with his jacket flying out behind him and hammocks on exotic islands and on yachts. Like, my nigga, you are in school. Like, I don't even understand.
And in the meantime, apparently, you know, there was a lot of financial aid issues at Howard. So a lot of people were getting turned down for financial aid. Meanwhile, he's stealing financial aid left and right, carrying around a Gucci bag in pretty much every picture.
a satchel, a Gucci satchel.
Yeah, satchel, the over the shoulder joint.
I think that he released a statement today,
which was stupid.
I also found it very interesting how someone who could have been completely innocent and is a grad student, was able to locate, find, and hire an attorney to represent them put out a statement that quick
to ABC News,
which sounds to me like
well, to everybody, Also, apparently the lawyer has been to divinity school, so we can already tell what kind of lawyer that is.
Oh, this Reverend Leon Lonnie Love.
Yeah, this is like your cousin who went to law school, but is also a pastor.
He's also a
motivational speaker.
That nigga's a real estate attorney.
Yeah, we're exactly.
He doing closes down in D.C.
Yeah, because my thing is, first of all, the fact that you put out a statement tells me, actually it solidifies some things for me. It tells me that you think that you're a brand. The fact that you feel like you needed to address this on a national level tells me that you are way too concerned about your public appearance.
Yeah, you want to be a star.
You actually think you're a personality, right? Like, you really could have just sat this one out and stayed quiet the investigation is happening. Like, say something to your family and your friends and shut the fuck up.
Nigga,
this nigga trying to get on the Breakfast Club.
No.
I'm not
saying nothing to nobody. And I love y'all niggas. And I wouldn't say nothing to nobody. I'm sequestering myself. I'm not tweeting nothing. I'm putting that phone down. I ain't saying shit. I'm talking on the landline.
Why weren't your social media accounts locked and erased immediately?
Dude,
I was under investigation, my shit would have been locked.
But that's the thing. The fact is that this is really what I saw from the first paragraph of that letter was that he is already clearly setting up his defense, which is when he says, I didn't do anything that was not common knowledge and approved.
Yeah.
Right. Which is already putting his superiors in the line of fire.
Oh yeah.
And I even think about this on a larger scale, because I find it very interesting that as a bank, like, unless he was using multiple banks to move this money around, I don't see how that didn't raise a flag.
But I think that some of this was actually paying his tuition. But the amount of money that actually, so maybe some of the payments were going directly to Howard.
So for example, right? If someone comes into your bank with like a tax refund check that is $37,000, right?
Right.
like Miss Irma came in with a $37,000 check.
Right.
That might raise a rev. My point is There's certain amounts that should at least make you aware
of
what happens, right?
And also,
you know, in banks, they have, because everyone knows about the $10,000 threshold, right? But what a lot of people don't know is that even when you do not go to the $10,000 threshold, there is something called structuring.
Your
banks are instructed to be aware and alert of structuring. So yes, the person may not come and do a $10,000 transaction once a week or every other week. They may do, you know, $2,500 every week. And it's without fail. It doesn't vary. You know, like when you start to see like things like that, they're supposed to ring the alarm.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you send it up the flagpole. I say all that to say is that I can't imagine that I don't know, but like, dude, you cannot $430,000 is a massive amount of money.
Apparently the way it happened was The employees, because all of these people were employees, which in and of itself, the fact that employees were double dipping should have just raised the flag in the system anyway. But the employees were already receiving tuition remission. And on top of that, they also got university grants. So my guess is that the tuition remission was being paid directly to Howard. So my guess is that the $429,000 is in value, not in direct dollars that went into his hands. But even still, that's a lot of fucking money. And you just out your whatever. Howard, get your bursars office together, my nigga. Like, what the hell? How do you not? I would think that any employee in the financial aid office receiving above a certain amount of financial aid, I mean, I know people on work study are usually also on financial aid, but still, there got to be some kind of checks and balances.
No? Listen, it ain't even that. Listen, if this dude is a working student, he's working in the financial aid office. This nigga is in there with Louis Vuitton this and Gucci and all sorts of like $600-$700 smoking shoes. Like, nah, bro, what the fuck's going on?
Well, I got a theory.
He ain't alone.
I won't be. Well, he's definitely not alone, and I won't be surprised. This is my theory. It's me myself, Pertinent, is speaking. Me, myself, Pertinent. If it don't come out.
We about to get some Mr. Jeff. We about to get some Jeffrey Eisen.
Yes, you is. That don't come out. Tyrone had a little man friend up in that office.
Don't do that. Tyrone
had a little man friend up in there.
But Jeff, Tyrone worked in the office.
I know what I'm saying now. Tyrone, one of Tyrone's bosses, one of the little men friends, they was in this thing together, not taking the trip together. Who was
that's problematic.
Them,
you know
who
that,
was
right.
taking all them pictures with Tyrone? Who was taking all?
He had a personal videographer, but you know that's a problem. You know that that's a problematic theory that Tyrone when six people have gotten fired, you're going to say that the gay man was fucking with an accomplice. You know that's problematic because it's six motherfuckers who got fired. So was all of them fucking somebody?
Who took a picture of Tyrone in that hammock?
Tyrone had a social media person with him. But I'm saying, unless you're going to say that all six people who were doing this shit, because they were probably all helping each other out. So unless you're going to say that all six people were fucking somebody, you can't say
Tyrone. And here's the thing. The worst part about this is that he fucked up like what was probably a smooth scam. Like there was somebody who was probably like, all right, I just need this 10 grand to get through the semester. And I'm gonna just do my little shit here, boom, boom, boom. Yo, I cannot wrap my head around. I don't care if it was cash or the cash value.
Right.
Like 400 and that is a lot.
That's a lot of
fucking money.
Yeah, it is.
And that's tax free, right?
Not even just tax free. Like this is over the course of like 4 years, my nigga. You was moving six figures.
Yeah.
Yep.
No.
Through an account. Yeah. Like I don't even understand. I don't understand how the banking system works. How that shit was even possible.
Well, I also just don't know what he thought was going to happen, right? Because the other thing is, first of all, these post 2000 scammers who are scamming for the look and to maintain
for the gram.
Appearances, y'all are stupid because that's the type of shit that will get you caught every motherfucking time. Yeah. So like back in my day, I'm not saying I personally did any of this, but I had heard that back in my day,
from a friend of mine,
what I had heard it was known to happen was, you know, folks was just trying to call long distance because that was a lot of money back then. I know it's hard to believe now, but that was oof. Folks were just trying to call long distance, get some polo, get some Hilfiger, maybe get a little bit of gold here and there. Maybe get a little bit of change. I mean, college is about learning how to work through the system and how to develop some survival tactics. And every once in a while, that might involve a scam. But you got to know the line. Like, you got to know what's not going to get you jail time. You got to know what's not going to get you kicked out of school. And you got to learn that line while you don't have a whole lot to lose. And right now, Tyrone has a lot to fucking lose. And he got greedy and he got flossy. Like I said this on Twitter. In Goodfellas, everything fell apart when everybody started spending the money from the truck heist, when all they needed to do was just sit on it for a minute.
I just want to know who took them, who's taking these pictures of Tyrone?
I'm seriously, I need to see this thoroughly investigated because I really do need to follow the money. And I mean that in a very literal sense. Like, where was he depositing that? Was he just going to like Wells Fargo and dropping a check in? Like, what is the process? Isn't there like a two-tier system? Like, at some point, like, doesn't the financial aid check, doesn't it require a certain level of signature after a certain, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is the process here? Like, how was this even It sounds crazy, but you know what? Listen, you know, next week we'll hear about a $87 billion, you know, ring of Medicaid fraud. Like, right. You know what I'm saying? And it is what it is.
It definitely makes Howard look bad because this should have been caught way ahead of time. They just did an audit in 2016. So it should have been caught. And also, apparently the last audit they did before 2016 was 2006, which, what? That's crazy. But it should have been flagged by Howard long before this. There should be more checks and balances in place. But a lot of people are going to go down for this because even if all six of those people were working together, there's somebody somewhere who saw these applications coming through and pushed them through. And that, you know, it's like, how did y'all not catch that, you know?
Hey, yeah. Tyrone, he wore some nice shit, though.
I mean, he wore what people think is nice shit. You know what I mean? Like, the fashion.
That coat was atrocious.
The coat was crazy. It wasn't real fashion sense. It was Instagram fashion. It was totally Instagram fashion.
It was Instagram DC, maybe, you know, homosexually gay fashion.
Homosexually gay fashion.
You know what I'm saying? Nigga had the full Nautica suit on the yacht. You know what I'm saying? Play on player.
It was what you think fly shit looks like. But that's what I mean when I also say, what did he think was going to happen? Because when you graduate and go out into the real world, nigga, you can't even do that.
You can't wear that nowhere.
I've made six figures for the past 4 years. My life don't look like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I went to Cuba, but I ain't on Cuba and on a yacht and in a fur all at the same time. Like, one at a time, nigga, goddamn.
Yeah, so.
Nigga hustling backwards.
Exactly.
Backwards.
So I just wanted to.
It up for everybody.
You know, just wanted to say that before we ended the show. Peace of Tyrone, the joke is going to keep flying, and I'm going to keep laughing.
Yeah. I feel like we're missing something big. Maybe not. I don't know why.
I mean, I don't want to talk about Trump this week. I'm tired of this punk ass. Everybody get Ben Carson punk ass up out of there next.
Thank God. We didn't talk about Ben Carson and Candy at the goddamn table.
Right under the bus. Like, fuck you, Candy.
But also, it made him look worse because you mean your wife can authorize a $31,000 spend in your department when she's not a federal employee?
Like, exactly.
What the fuck is that?
Exactly.
So that didn't help. Ben Carson's a punk. But also, there's, I don't know. Have y'all been watching Real Housewives? Because the season's almost over.
I didn't watch it this week. It doesn't hold my interest like it used to. I'm gonna jump on in the Real Housewives of Potomac though.
Yeah, I can understand that.
See what them high yellow gals is doing.
I was just gonna say that Kenya's husband finally showed up.
A word.
Okay. And he has a nose ring, so some of the girls are like. There's some questions. And I will admit, I ain't seen niggas with nose rings since about 95. So anyway.
I watch it this week.
He's handsome though, but yeah. Okay. Oh, also, we had a couple of comments this week, but we haven't had questions or anything that anybody wanted addressed on air. But just a reminder, you can email us at thepoplifepodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at thepoplifepodcast or DM us if you have any comments or questions. Or the suggestion was put forth to have a "What Would Sean Do" segment, but somebody responded that Sean's answer would always be "They be all right."
It'd be all right.
So I don't know if that's going to become a thing, but should you want advice from any of the three of us for whatever fucking reason, feel free to ask for that as
well. Please do.
And we appreciate y'all.
Thank you for listening, and we will see y'all next week.
Peace.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.